You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson talks to us about film. You can read his stuff at filmology.blog. It's but with a PH. Hi there, Josh.
Good afternoon.
I do want to know from you today. We are going to have a look at a film by the Japanese legend. Do you say, how do you say his first name?
Hayao Miyazaki.
Hayao Miyazaki. If you have seen The Wind Rises, I'd love to hear from you. You've probably seen Spirited Away. You might have seen Princess Mononoke. His new film is here, so I'd love to hear from you about your absolute favorite animated film. There's so many. 1300 222 774. You've got to tell us why. You've got to have a good reason for why it's your favorite, the most mind-blowing. 1300 222 774 is the phone number. Josh, we'll play a little bit of the music for this in a moment, but set up what The Wind Rises is about and what it's like.
This is the final film. This is a swan song for Hayao Miyazaki, long-time animator and director from the famed Studio Ghibli in Japan. This is an interesting change of pace, well, at least a slight change of pace to some of his earlier films. It's quite strongly biographical. It charts an aeronautical engineer from sort of 1920s Japan through to the outbreak and the kind of consequences of World War II, that guy who's designing aeroplanes and is caught between his love of the aircraft and their ultimate kind of consequences and what they're going to be used for.
It's about the designer of the Zero, no?
It is.
These are the planes we all see in World War II movies. These are the planes that wrought all the destruction. Okay, let's just have a little listen to just the music from the trailer. The type of music that you get, and the remarkable aspect to his films is that the music can be saccharine sweet, yet the images and the story just sort of pierces you in the heart. I hope you've had a chance to weep during a Miyazaki film. If you haven't, I think you're missing out. So is it as straightforward? Is it just the telling of the story of this guy's life, the plane designer? How does it work?
Well, it's actually interesting in the context of his broader career, because so many of his recent films, like Spirited Away, like Mononoke, are about childhood experiences and that sort of the sense of wonder, fantasy, imagination, and how that relates to their kind of real domestic life. This begins with a sequence which seems straight out of those types of films. We have a young guy who's Jiro, the young boy, dreaming of flying this aircraft around his village, and then suddenly we have these ominous kind of planes that start bombing and his plane gets destroyed. And that's really the only scene we get from childhood in the film. And he moves forward to Jiro as an older man at university, or he's sort of a younger man at university. And I think what Miyazaki is really playing with here, or is expressing, is his biography, his experience of Japan, because he's now 73, 74. He was born in the 40s. So I guess of that sort of slight pre-World War II, and then definitely the post-World War II kind of aftermath. But also this idea of the creator. It's a film a bit like Hugo. When we talked about this was sort of Scorsese's love letter to cinema, well, this is Miyazaki's love letter to someone who is a creator, even though it's not explicitly an animator.
But why does he pick the creator of the plane that represents so much of the part of Japanese history that... Well, it's such a divisive part of their history still, isn't it?
It is. One of the key themes that runs throughout this film, and it's really beautifully done, he's got such a deft touch as a filmmaker, is that there is no such thing, or there's no mutual exclusivity between the horror and destruction and beauty. You know, you can't have one without the other. And we see this in The Plane, and I guess that's the turmoil of the artist. He's creating for the right reasons of his own sort of passion, but with that knowledge that inevitably there's going to be the destruction down the line. And we see this with even the motif of The Wind. I mean, so many of Miyazaki's films play with the natural world and the wonder of the natural world and its destruction, and this idea, these two worlds, they're constantly cohabiting, you know. And it's the same in this film with the realms of imagination and fantasy and how they kind of fold into and throughout the film into the reality of this guy, even as he sort of ages throughout the narrative. One of the things that a few people have said about this film, they find it quite slow, and it is a slow burn narrative, but that's a real trait of Japanese animation. It's a trait of all Miyazaki's films, or Japanese cinema more broadly, I think.
Akira is not a slow burn.
Well, it's still over 2 hours, so it's still quite a long film for an animation. Mm. And the other thing that I find fascinating about Miyazaki's works in a contemporary context is they don't rely on the very self-referentiality of American animation. Think about the Toy Stories, the Shreks.
The self-conscious irony.
Yeah, well, or the fact that, you know, I mean, Toy Story is the perfect example. You've got sort of merchandising, all these different toy companies referencing films from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, referring to itself in the sequels. Miyazaki's films don't do that. They have an earnestness that they're not about animation. They're not about the culture. It's more about the storytelling. One of the things he does in this film, which is quite remarkable, he introduces a romantic subplot about halfway through, and yet still never lets that sidetrack the narrative from the emphasis on the Jiro character.
Okay. So did you like it?
I loved it. I think it's an incredibly touching film and really beautiful as well.
Okay. It is The Wind Rises by Hayao Miyazaki. Just let me read a few of these texts, Raf. I think this is, I'm saying this correctly, Wings of Honamis is easily my favourite anime film. That's from Ben. Another, not sure if it's from Ghibli Studios, but my favourite is The Cat Returns. And Nathan in Ballarat says, The Iron Giant is an underrated animated film. Great characters and animation. Also a great combination of 2D and 3D animation. And I'm just give a plug here for David, who says, The original Transformers movie is his favourite animation because it's so tacky in 80s that you have to love it. Dancing Robots. Yeah, I'm not sure that I have to love it, but still. I'm fascinated by the film Frozen, which is the Pixar reboot of the Disney princess flick. They got John Lasseter from Pixar to make this film. They are going batshit crazy for that, right, in the States. They love it. They love it, love it, love it. It won best film. It won best song.
Who is the singer of the song again?
Oh, well, I'm not going to say her name because I don't want to get Travolta-fied. But what I'm interested by is, everyone I know seems to really hate it, and hate it because it seems like such an old-fashioned Disney film. Have you seen Frozen?
No, I actually passed it over. It didn't get, it wasn't well received critically here at all. But you're right; it's made so much money for Disney that it's already spawning sequels, and it's sort of bankrolling their next three projects. And it's really no surprise that Frozen won the Oscar over The Wind Rises, on Sunday night, Monday.
So it did beat. Look, it did beat the Miyazaki film. But I'd be interested too if you've seen Frozen. I'm fascinated to know. I know it's being lauded as a, everything from a sort of pseudo same-sex love story, a fantastic exploration of relationships between sisters. Yet then, I think when I read about it being critiqued in Australia, people seem to really just can't stand it at all. And yes, forgive me, I think I slipped out the sort of word that you don't get on a family show, so forgive me. But let me go through a few of your texts, and I would love to hear from you, your favourite animated films. I'm still feeling guilty about the first time I saw Toy Story. I just felt really guilty about all my old toys.
Did you cry during Toy Story 3? Did you have a man cry like I did?
No, I didn't in 3, but I did in number 1. Let's have a little listen to Toy Story 3, the furnace scene. Slowly getting pulled into the furnace.
There's a wonderful prank online, if you YouTube it, where a couple of guys re-edited the DVD for their family and they're going to watch this at Christmas, and they cut the film off at that end, so it ends with all the toys dying in the furnace, and the mum, the reaction from the mum is like, that can't be how, and then they tell her at Christmas dinner and they've got footage of her reaction. It's very funny.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Yes, Pea Shooter, thank you. I knew someone would mention it. He's mentioning the old Lord of the Rings, Watership Down, but also heavy metal from the 1980s. Let's listen to the song. It's a heavy metal. The Chico Roll, Sandman Band. You haven't seen heavy metal yet, lady.
A step beyond science fiction.
I missed that guy's voice.
Yeah, don't show that one to the kids, but it's pretty special. Now, I did put the call out there for Frozen. I want to know if it's any good. One text is saying, my kids loved it, but it made me want to vomit. It was so bad. But I don't think the callers agree with that view. George has called from Burwood. Hi, George.
G'day, guys. I took my seven-year-old twins to see it, and I found it quite disturbing in that it had a lot of dark territory that my daughter, who's seven and far more perceptive than I was when I was 17, let alone 7.
Yeah.
A lot of mutual territory that we could actually discuss after the movie about how dark it was. And
what do you mean by dark? What were the issues that were coming up?
Look, for example, how one of the sisters basically barricaded herself from the rest of the world, and why, and how she realized that she was had to live alone, or she destroyed one else around her, and
yeah.
that sort of all the territory that emanated from that. And she was very when that happens, when you see a lot of movies that are sort of you expect to see the adult side, they see the kiddie side, and you all go home happy, and
yeah, it's not like that, is it?
No, this is very sort of dark neutral territory, if I can call it.
But I think that's why it's resonating so much in America. I mean, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the way it is helping girls talk about their emotional lives, their relationships with their sisters. I'm just curious. I see lots of praise in the States and no praise here. But thanks, George. Look, I think that's the sort of experience a lot of people are having. We're also talking about the film that it didn't win the Oscar. Frozen did. The Wind Rises is Hayao Miyazaki's film. But I do want to know your favourite animation flick, the one that moves you the most. And someone else for best animated films, Terminator series, The Matrix, Lord of the Rings. Aren't most movies animated these days? Nice point.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Look, just a few more of your Frozen texts, then I want to talk about the Gore Vidal doco. Best animated film ever, How to Train Your Dragon. Gorgeous, that's from Sally in Geelong. On Frozen, you know a movie worked for kids and girls in particular when they ask for birthday parties to be Frozen parties. Mini chairs and tables in that coloured theme. And Raph, my daughters aged 8 and 6 adore Frozen. They and their friends roleplay it at home, they have the soundtrack, they sing along, they make up legendary games. It has a good message about true love not happening instantly and strong female leads. Tell me about Gore Vidal, The United States of America, the documentary.
Yeah, United States of Amnesia.
Really
interesting doco. It's done the festival circuit and it's on limited release here in Melbourne now. Look, there's two points or two great ingredients for a fantastic documentary. One is you have a great subject, and as far as subjects go, Gore Vidal's pretty decent one. And the other one is you've got to nail the structure. And this film has a wonderful structure. So it's a biographical documentary that focuses mainly on his life in a chronological momentum. But what it does, and where I think it really succeeds, is it uses all the archival footage of his work as a writer, as a sort of political commentator, and so on. So we have the interviews of the time, but we also have this constant reflection of contemporary interviews reflecting on those various moments. So it really is a retracing his sort of personal history, but also the kind of rich personal or rich political history of America from the, you know, the 50s right through to when
so
he passed
sort of
away.
A cultural history of why he was prominent and why he had impact.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And keeps coming back to politics and this idea of cultural amnesia. This is, we never learn anything and we keep repeating the same mistakes again and again.
Sounds a little depressing. Have a listen to the trailer for United States of Amnesia.
In the United States, 5% of the population have 20% of the income, and the bottom 20% have 5% of the income.
Islam, Judaism, Christianity are the three great evils that have befallen the world.
And the difference between a homosexual and a heterosexual is about the difference between somebody who has brown eyes and somebody who has blue eyes.
Who says so?
I say so.
I love the way you describe this country as the United States of Amnesia.
Did I say that?
Yes.
You've forgotten.
His whole career as essayist, playwright, novelist comes down to one thing, the terrible discrepancy between the possibilities put forward by the founding fathers and the actual results of what we got.
Wow, that's kind of sobering stuff.
Well, what keeps this documentary light and stops it from just becoming a kind of a didactic,
a polemic.
Yeah, political lesson is his wonderful anecdotes. He has such an incredible wit, and he talks about, so he went into showbiz, and of course one of the films he wrote, the screenplay for, was Ben-Hur, and he makes comments like this. Is a wonderful anecdote. He says, when he turned up to the set, he says, "I found that they had built everything as extravagantly as I had written it, including Charlton Heston."
Yeah, right.
And then, I mean, you know, the political anecdotes are just as good. His line about Reagan, we have terrible news from the White House, the Reagan Library has burnt down, both books were destroyed, but the real tragedy is he hadn't finished colouring in the second one. And so that's what keeps this documentary like. It's hard not to fall in love with this man over again.
Is it filmed? Are those interviews filmed for this documentary, or it's a culling of all of the interviews he's given over time?
It is such an expanse of interviews. There were some contemporary ones. The director actually is an Australian-born director, Nicholas Rothel.
Oh,
it's a really, really impressive documentary. So I can't recommend it enough.
Okay, but that's kind of on a bit limited release?
Yeah, it's very limited release. I think you'll find it at the Nova and maybe some of the Palace cinemas.
Okay. Now, look, I have neglected to mention quite a few texts coming in about people just weeping in the opening minutes of another animated film called Up. You might recall the meeting between the old man and the boy, meeting the talking dog.
Did that dog just say hi there?
Oh, yes. My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you. My master made me this collar. He is a good and smart master, and he made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel!
And I'm surprised. I'm not surprised you mentioned Up. Maybe we've just been so inundated with Pixar films. And someone actually texted in about Frozen. Oh, I didn't like it. I want to return to Pixar. It is Pixar, but still. No one mentioned Bambi.
We made it. We made it, Mother. Mother.
Oh, how could you not mention that bit? It's like it's entered the shorthand. You can't kill Bambi, but no one mentioned it. There you go. Josh Nelson's a film critic, apparently. You can check out his blog at filmology.com. I don't know why I'm being cruel today. It's spelled with a PH.